Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody to Paranexus Universe. This is your host, Doug Kelly. It is Thursday, February 5th, 2009. It's great to have everyone here. And I'm here with Grant. Hey, Grant, how are you?
Hey, everybody. Just back from Casa Dagar over the past week, and I feel re-energized.
Oh, yeah? Tell us about it.
Oh, it was just nice. You know, I like Casa Dagar. It's quiet. It's peaceful. And the vibes are good there. And it's topographically, it's not like Florida. It's kind of hilly, and here in Florida, usually we're pretty flat. But just the vibes are really nice there, and the hotel's always cool.
Yeah.
The hotel's haunted, and that weekend it was pretty active. I didn't feel anything, but some folks that I was with, they thought that they had experienced a few things. So it was a lot of fun. And best part was there was hardly anybody there, Doug.
Must be that time.
Except the ghosts, so yeah.
Well, cool. Well, we appreciate everyone joining us in tonight. We have a great guest. We're going to talk about Tesla. And just by way of reminder, if you'd like to call in and ask questions, you're more than welcome to do that. The numbers are on your screen, 347-945-7799. Or you can ask questions in the chat room. Love to have those as well. So let's get on with our guest. Tonight we have Dr. Mark Seifer with us. Dr. Seifer has a Bachelor of Science degree from the University of Rhode Island, postgraduate work in graphology at the New School for Social Research, a master's degree from the University of Chicago, and a doctorate in psychology from Saybrook Institute. He's taught courses on consciousness at Providence College School of Continuing Education for 15 years and is presently a visiting lecturer in psychology at Roger Williams University. He is an expert on Nikola Tesla. He is the author of 8 books, one of them, a couple of them about Tesla, one in particular we're going to talk about tonight. Dr. Seifer, it's very good to have you on the show with us. Welcome.
You're welcome.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
So you've got quite a bio, and I didn't even read it all. There's a lot of good stuff, and that's on paranexus.org if you'd like to read that. A lot of stuff. You've been a consultant for the Biography Channel, correct?
Yes. Uh-huh.
60 Minutes and the American Experience. You're in the marquee Who's Who in the World. A lot of stuff. You're into handwriting analysis. Looks like you've done screenplays and novels. And one of your books on transcending the speed of light, that's what you were talking about, this kind of the sequel to the Tesla book, is that correct?
It has a definite sequel aspect to it, because when I wrote the biography of Tesla, it's a very in-depth biography, but there were also a few questions that I myself hadn't totally answered, and I answered some of those in Transcending the Speed of Light, particularly Tesla's theory on gravity and his ether theory. There's a big section in Transcending the Speed of Light on Tesla's kind of hidden theory of gravity and his ether theory.
So, Doctor, for the benefit of those in our audience who may not know who Tesla is, although that I find that kind of might be improbable, but for the benefit of those who might know who Tesla is, can you kind of, maybe we could start there and you give our audience kind of an idea of what kind of a genius this fellow was?
Yes. Tesla was born in 1856 and he died in 1943. he has almost the exact same lifespan as Sigmund Freud. They were both born in 1856, and Freud died in 1939, and they're both in their 80s. And I think if most people obviously know who Tom Edison is, Tesla and Edison are, I think, pretty equal in their stature in what they've done in the field of electronics and inventions. And Tesla worked for Edison. Edison's about 10 years older than Tesla. So Tesla actually, when he came to the United States, he had already invented something called the rotating magnetic field. And the problem in the 1880s was how to send electricity over long distances. And Edison was sending electricity about a mile, and that was to lighthouses. And also Westinghouse and L.E. Thompson, these were the three people that were working against each other. They all had systems that sent electricity about a mile to lighthouses. Now, this meant that if you wanted to light, New York City, you probably need two or three power stations because there's so many houses. And if you wanted to light, say, Long Island, you would have – Long Island is 70 miles long or whatever it is. You would need a power station at every 2 miles or every mile across the island, you would need a power station. So even when Tesla first came into the United States, there were already hundreds and hundreds of power stations, and by the time his invention came into being, there were thousands of power stations, and they were all coal-operated, which meant that there was tremendous pollution in the air, and again, the distance was only about a mile. And Tesla's invention of the rotating magnetic field did away with something called the commutator, which caused electricity, which was naturally in an alternating state, to be converted to direct current. So it'll take about a second, but I think it's really worth for your listeners to understand it, because once you realize the brilliance of the invention, then you really realize how great Tesla is.
Ma, please go ahead.
Now, let's say you were trying to harness a river that was flowing downstream and then upstream and then downstream and upstream, but somehow make a water wheel turn. You would see that it's impossible, because as the water started to go downstream, the water wheel would turn in one direction, and as it turned upstream, it would turn in another direction. Electricity is the same thing. It flows downstream and upstream and downstream and upstream. That's what an alternating current is. So what the inventors of the day, particularly Edison, did was they converted it to direct current. And to do that, you used something called a commutator. But you lost about 90-something percent of the electricity to do that. So what Tesla did was he removed the commutator, and he did that by creating two alternating currents out of phase with each other, which explains very clearly how it's done in Wizard. The end result was that not only could you send electricity hundreds and hundreds of miles from one power source, but also you could distribute electrical power. So before Tesla's invention, you could send electricity about a mile to light houses, and power dropped off over distance. So if your house was near the power station, you had bright lights. If you were far away, you had dull lights. After Tesla's system, you could send electricity hundreds of miles, and it was for electrical power. So Edison's system, you could not run a refrigerator, you couldn't run a vacuum cleaner, you couldn't do any of those kinds of things. With Tesla's system, one system set up at Niagara Falls, which is pollution-free because it runs on the waterfall, doesn't pollute the air, you can send hundreds of thousands of volts to Chicago, to Boston, to Toronto, to Philadelphia, to the entire Northeast. So from one power source, the Niagara Falls power source, you can light up the entire Northeast, and you can not only light homes, but you can run power systems so that you can have factories. So before Tesla, every factory, and those people who live in New England know this, every factory was along a river because you had to be close to the power source.
Yep.
After Tesla, you could put a factory in the middle of a forest as long as you could get a long-distance power line to them. So I kind of liken it to comparing a horse and buggy to a jet aircraft. That's the difference. And the irony, because you mentioned his fame, the irony was that Tesla was world famous in the 1890s because his system changed the world. And then something happens which I discuss obviously in the story, and was the subject of my doctoral dissertation. I want to find out how could such an important guy who invented our electrical power system just disappear off the history books. But the other thing about Tesla is he didn't just invent the electrical power system. He also invented fluorescent lights. All major buildings now are lit by fluorescent lights. The reason why they were not lit by fluorescent lights before the 1940s was the power companies wanted us to spend a lot of money on electrical power. They were forced because of the high demand to eventually use that invention. And also Tesla is the inventor of remote control, radio, and television. All the technology behind wireless mass communication is all directly linked to Tesla. Now, when I first learned about Tesla, I didn't believe this. I mean, I could not believe that a guy who invented a wireless system, electrical power grid, a remote control, fluorescent lights, was a guy I never heard of. I mean, I simply had never heard of the guy. This was in the 1970s, and I'd already had a master's degree. I was already in my 20s. My mid-20s, and so I set out to find out, number one, is he really the inventor of all these things, and number two, if he is, what happened to cause such an important man's name to just disappear from the history books? And that's pretty much what I did.
Well, did Tesla, you know, I always kind of thought, because I didn't know that much about Tesla, I kind of thought, well, he's like one of those kind of guy, your backyard genius, but he was a pretty well-educated fellow, wasn't he? He was educated in Europe as a electrical engineer.
Yes, he went to two different schools after high school. He went in Graz in Austria, and he studied electrical engineering, and then he went to the University of Prague. And in doing my research, it was my doctoral dissertation, and I spent, you know, 5, 6, 7 years of intense research. Just to on that aspect of it,
mm-hmm.
to get the doctorate, and then I spent another 6 or 7 years to write the biography. I am not kidding. I honestly and truly put 14 years of daily work in to get this to put this book together. And I had a lot of dead ends, and I had a lot of great things happen. I wrote to the library at the University of Prague, and I said, "Do you have any record of Tesla even going to this school?" And she said, "Oh, yeah, here are his grades, and here are the teachers he had." So I got a letter, you know, like 6 months later, of a list of his teachers and a list of the courses that he took and his grades. He was an A-plus student. And also, I found out that one of his teachers was very, very famous. He's got a funny name. His name is Carl Stumpf, S-T-U-M-P-F. And you can look him up. He's a rather famous guy. He's in a lot of the psych books. And Stumpf was an opponent of Ernst Mach. So Mach was also teaching at the University of Prague at the time. So Tesla never took a course with Mach, but he had to know who Mach was because Mach was the most famous scientist at the university. Mach, of course, played a big role in influencing Einstein and his theory of relativity. And these two guys were battling it out. And Stumpf basically believed in what became behaviorism, that everything came from outside, that all creativity stemmed from outside, which is kind of the opposite of Freud's belief that we have an unconscious that gives us creative thoughts. And Tesla, ironically, was a proponent of Stumpf's idea. In other words, as creative as Tesla was, he actually felt that all of his creativity came from some stimulus from outside him, that it didn't come from deep inside him. So he's kind of a contradictory character. But I learned a lot about his thinking once I got a list of his courses and what he took. He took most courses in physics and electrical engineering at Prague. And then he eventually got to Paris and started working for Edison at his electrical light plant in Paris.
What year was that, Doctor? Was that like around 1880s or so?
Hey, let me interrupt. For just a
sure.
Second. I need to tell our listeners that the chat room, for whatever reason, on Blog Talk Radio is not working tonight due to a third-party vendor issue. So if you're a Paranexus member, go to paranexus.org, log in, and click on the chat room on Paranexus if you'd like to join us in the chat room. It's right there on the front page. Just look for the Nexus chat, and you can join us there. So, and Dr. Cypher, if I could have you just speak up a little bit, that would be, our listeners could hear you just a little bit better. Thanks. Go ahead with your question, Grant.
Yeah, I was just asking Dr. Cypher if around what time Tesla hooked up with Edison.
Well, what happened was he was in college when he found out that electricity was very was not working correctly, that the commutator was causing this problem, and he worked on that problem and solved it in Budapest around 1881 or thereabouts. And then in 1882 he moved to Paris and he worked for Edison's electrical lamp place, and he built the first rotating magnetic field in Strasbourg in France at that time. And one of the things I discovered, I've looked in all the Edison biographies, there's no discussion of Edison traveling to Paris in 1882, but in fact Edison met Tesla in Paris in 1882. I found a quote from Edison where he actually talks about his first meeting with Tesla. So that's how they first met, and then Tesla took the boat and he moved to the United States and worked for the Wizard of Menlo Park in New York City in 1884, and that's how their union really began.
How long did they work together? It would seem like both of them, as bright as they were, both geniuses, probably I would imagine there was some friction between the two of them as well.
Well, what happened was Edison was in competition with two other forces, Elihu Thompson, who had the Thompson-Houston Company, and George Westinghouse, who had the Westinghouse Company. Both Westinghouse and Elihu Thompson were using alternating current to light houses, but they also had commutators. In other words, they had the exact same problem that Edison had. They could only send it about a mile, and they could only light homes. But they were using AC, and Edison was using DC. So when Tesla got to New York City, and he's working for Edison, he said, I have a much more efficient AC machine, which was his great invention, which ended up at Niagara Falls. Edison was blind to it because he was so mad at Elihu Thompson for stealing his light bulb, and he's in competition with Westinghouse. He didn't want to hear anything about the invention. So that invention that I explained to you, Tesla never had that conversation. He did not have a five-minute conversation to explain to Edison what his invention was. And he worked for Edison for about a year, perfecting his DC equipment, but Edison simply would not listen, because how could you harness something that's gone backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards? He just couldn't understand how it worked, because he was a very practical guy. Edison was brilliant, and I'm sure he would have understood it if he'd sat down, but he was just closed because he was so mad at the other two guys. And so he promised Tesla $50,000 if Tesla would make his DC equipment more efficient. And then Tesla tried to collect, and Edison said, I was just kidding. I wasn't really going to give you $50,000. Yeah, if you do, I'll give you $50,000. And Tesla took him at his word. So there was a split between them, and there was a lot of animosity between them for a while. They eventually become friends again. But I'm an old guy, so I'm from the Willie Mays, Mickey Mantle days, and, you know, the competition then. And I think that it was that kind of thing. They were like Willie Mays and Mickey Mantle, these two great people that had a kind of a love-hate relationship.
And they were both very popular figures with the American public at the time as well. So they probably did a little grandstanding, I would imagine.
Yes, they did. And, of course, there was the prize was who was going to harness Niagara Falls. The first big step was to who would be to harness the Chicago World's Fair of 1893. Tesla had already sold his patents to Westinghouse, and Westinghouse in the 1890s wanted to advertise that this was Tesla's idea because Tesla was world famous and he needed to support the patents. So the World's Fair of 1893 was the first city ever lit by Tesla's system. But Westinghouse couldn't use the electric light bulb, which was Edison's bulb. And so he had to use an old light bulb. It was called a stopper lamp, which was another battle that Westinghouse and Edison was having. It's kind of a funny story. Edison invented the filament, and Sawyer, who sold his patents to Westinghouse, invented the vacuum. So you have the electric light bulb is a vacuum bulb with a carbon filament. Sawyer had filled it up with nitrogen, but it was a vacuum sealed lamp. and Edison invented the filament. So they sued each other, and Sawyer actually won the first round. Edison is seen as the inventor of the light bulb, but he didn't really invent the light bulb. He and Sawyer invented it, and there were other inventors as well. But Edison won, and so Edison is seen as the winner, as the inventor of the light bulb. When you really get into the heart and soul of it, he only invented part of it. And so when he lost the right to light the Chicago Fair, Westinghouse couldn't use the light bulb, so he had to use the old Sawyer light bulb. So when you see these pictures of the light bulbs being lit, they're inferior light bulbs filled with nitrogen. And so then the next step was, the real big prize was who would harness Niagara Falls. And Edison was still trying to use his direct current system. But because he was more popular than Tesla and he was more popular than Westinghouse, he had a big PR campaign to show that Westinghouse's system, the AC system, was very dangerous. And he started electrocuting cats and dogs, a horse, and even an elephant with Tesla's alternating current. And we have a little picture of it in one of our YouTubes, where you see the elephant actually being electrocuted with the Tesla system. So what Tesla figured out was how to send electricity through his body to show that AC was safe if you knew what you were doing. And so all those pictures of Tesla's lit up like a Christmas tree was to try and win the battle of the currents. At that time, William Kemmler, who had murdered his wife with an axe, was the first man to be electrocuted, and this was before Niagara Falls was built. And they used the Westinghouse system, and Edison actually appeared at the trial, and he said the best way to electrocute somebody is to Westinghouse them, is to use an AC system. So there was a lot of battles there. But the big irony of the Edison side of this story is that he was in big debt, and so he went to J.P. Morgan, and Morgan wanted to combine all three companies. He wanted to combine Westinghouse, L.E. Thompson's company, and Edison's, and Westinghouse wanted nothing to do with that. So he went to L.E. Thompson and says, "We'd like to buy you out." And L.E. Thompson says, "What do you mean buy me out? I'm profitable. You guys are in debt." So Morgan said, "All right, so you buy us out. I don't care. I just want to create a monopoly. I don't care who bought who." And what they did was they changed the name of the Edison Electric Company to the General Electric Company. So GE is the combination of the old Edison Electric and Thompson Houston, L.U. Thompson's company. And that's how General Electric was created. And they took Edison's name off the masthead, and he never worked in electricity again. He moved into motion pictures. So his whole life changed due to the drama of this whole, the war of the currents.
That's amazing. Let me just make another announcement about the chat room. If you're listening to the program and you can't find the chat room button, that's because it's not there. Apparently, Blog Talk Radio has an issue with the chat room, so it's not available tonight. If you're a Paranexus member, just go to paranexus.org. And look on the index page. You got to log in, but look on the index, just the main page, and scroll down a little bit. You'll see a little picture that says Nexus Chat Rooms. Just click on it, and it will log you into the chat room there. If you don't have a Paranexus account, just register for one. I'll be monitoring it. We'll get you registered right away, and then you can go into the chat room if you have questions. If you'd like to call in, then we'd love to take your call for Dr. Cipher. And the number there is 347-945-7799. The number's on your screen. You can also use that click-to-talk button that's on your screen if you have a headset on your computer. So appreciate everybody's forbearance on that tonight. It's kind of a bummer, but nothing we can do about it.
Atmospherics.
Yeah, we call it atmospherics. So. Another question, Grant. Did you have something else on your mind? I've been the chat thing.
Well, you know, the one thing that I thought was really interesting, and I think there can be a comparison, and I'm sure you'll agree with me, Doctor, is the fact that these guys were writing on this technology that was a real wonderment to the folks at that time. It was like probably the equivalent of nuclear energy was to us when it came about. Wouldn't there be a parallel there?
I think there would be.
As far as the populace, as Joe Public was concerned, because they saw the advent of electricity as something that was absolutely marvelous, which it was.
I completely agree, but I would more link it more to the iPod
okay, sure.
The cell phone, internet. All, I mean, I kind of see the Steve Jobs, Bill Gates battle similar to the Tesla Edison battle. Bill Gates won the battle, really. I mean, 90% of all computers are IBM compatible computers. But if you know the history of Bill Gates, I mean, I have a tremendous amount of respect for what he's done, but also I think he made a big mistake. The Macintosh computer is a much better computer. It had a Motorola chip at its basis, which was much more elegant, set up for graphic designs. I'm going back to the 1980s. And the real story, I mean, it's not a hidden story at all, is that IBM had a meeting with a guy for a disk operating system, and the guy skipped the meeting. And he had a very good system, I don't know his name, and they called the second guy on the list, who is Bill Gates. And they said to Bill, do you have a disk operating system? He said, oh yeah, we got a disk operating system. And so they had a meeting with him. He didn't have a disk operating system, and they slapped one together almost over the weekend, and it had holes in it a mile wide, and he built his entire company on an inferior system. So it's kind of similar to Edison with direct current. And the proof of it is the bugs and viruses. Even today, the IBM-compatible computers are still much more susceptible to attacks than the Macintosh. Finally, now Intel does both, but it's taken about 20 years to get around this problem. But Gates pretty much built his entire company on an inferior system, knowing that the Macintosh was a much more elegant system. Where Steve Jobs went wrong was, I don't know how old you guys are, but the first Macintosh was an ugly little tiny machine. It was not the kind of machine that a secretary would put on a desk. And so Steve Jobs built his great Macintosh as it looked like a Model T Ford. It just looked like a rinky-dink thing, but it was actually a much better machine than the Gates machine, which looked like a very nice machine that fit on a desk. So he won by far the battle, but the negative result was that most of the computers sold over the last 20 years were much more inferior for doing high-level graphics. And all you have to do is speak to anybody who's in graphics and cartoons and all that stuff. They never used the IBM-compatible machines. They always used Mac-like machines. But you're talking about the wonderment. I think the wonderment of the new age, you know, with all this high-tech stuff is comparable. But what's so amazing to me is that if you've ever seen a giant Tesla coil do its thing, if you've ever seen a guy stand on a Tesla coil, buy a Tesla coil and put electricity through his body and hold up a light bulb and see the light bulb light or see lightning bolts come off his fingertips, even today, this is fantastic, incredible stuff. So here we are, we've been using electricity for 100 and some odd years. Back then in the 1890s, no one had electric lighting. You can imagine it must have been, he must have seemed like, you know, a god from another planet coming to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, when he lectured in St. Louis and Philadelphia and New York. When he lectured in St. Louis, so many people showed up at the lecture, this was like in 1893, that they had to move it to a larger hall. And I'm talking about like 3,000 people gather into this building just to see this incredible man send electricity through his body and do all these wireless experiments. So the wonderment, I don't think has ceased. I still think if you saw a real Tesla show today, it would be just as fascinating, just as amazing as it would have been 100 years ago.
Let me ask you a question from the chat room, and we have a couple of questions. One of the questions basically is, what about Tesla's pigeon? Something about its eyes shone with a bright light when it died. Do you have any information on that?
Yes. Tesla was celibate. Now, celibacy in those days is not as rare as you would think. There were a number of men that devoted themselves to science. Some of them eventually got married, but it was it was a known thing that people would decide that I'm going to devote my life to science and not get a wife and not get married. And that was Tesla's choice. So he never had a girlfriend. He had a girlfriend, you know, once in very early in his life, but he never really went out. He didn't date. He didn't have sex. He was celibate. And, you know, what does a man do with his need for affection? And he spent a lot of time with birds. And he would go to Bryant Park in particular, right by the New York Public Library, and he would feed the pigeons. And he would have hundreds and hundreds of seeds. He'd lay down, pigeons would land on him. And some of them had broken wings, and he'd bring them back to his hotel room. And a lot of the hotels were not too happy about a guy keeping pigeons in the hotel. But the story which John O'Neill tells, you know, he knew Tesla, and he wrote the first major biography on Tesla, is that Tesla fell in love with one of these pigeons, a white pigeon. Now, I think in some way, we've all had pets. Most of us have had pets. Some pets are special. Some pets you have a deeper relationship with. And I think that he had a deep relationship with this white pigeon. And I believe the quote that when the pigeon died, something really went out of his life. He was already in his 80s. And so he had this deep affection with pigeons, which I think is a poignant side to him, because I think he certainly was a charismatic person. I talk at great length in Wizard about his relationship with Katherine Johnson. Katherine's husband was his best friend, Robert Johnson, who was the editor of Century Magazine. But you read the letters between Katherine and Tesla, if you didn't know Robert existed, they look like love letters. Another thing which is not really, I don't think, appreciated about Tesla, he had a great sense of humor. They often seem as a stiff, you know, somber guy who was unhappy. Not true at all. He was very happy. He was living at the height of the Gilded Age, the 1890s. His friends were, you know, Mark Twain and Rudyard Kipling, people like that. He lived at the Waldorf Astoria, where kings and queens would come to stay for a weekend. He knew the richest people in the world. And he had a tremendous sense of humor. And he had this, I think, a vicarious love affair with Katherine Johnson. I know you talk about parapsychology. She was very interested in mediums in those days and in telepathy. And she kept saying, you know, I think I'm having a telepathic rapport with you. So in 1899, when Tesla went out to Colorado Springs to build a tower to check, to try and send impulses around the world, Katherine would write him, and she writes him, I talk about it in the book, and I'm smiling just thinking about it because it's so funny. She says to him, last Sunday at 4 p.m., I thought about you. Were you thinking about me at that time? And he writes back, I never thought about you, not even for an instant. And he's joking with her, you know.
And a real way with the women, huh?
Yeah, it's a little joke. I never thought about you, even for a moment.
Oh,
you know?
Goodness.
So he had a great sense of humor. But the question about the pigeon was, I think there was a lot there, this intimate relationship that he had with them.
Hmm. Well, it makes sense, I guess. You know, you have a close pet. Here's another question from the chat room from Mike. Did Tesla ever mention in his works about dimensional mechanics or what would be the start of quantum physics?
Yes, he did. And I trace very clearly in the 1890s, he spoke at Columbia University, and he gave a lecture, and he said that atoms would be structured like solar systems. And about 10 or 15, 20 years later, as quantum physics moved into high gear, Niels Bohr and Ernst Rutherford came along, and they both got Nobel Prizes for discussing the structure of the atom, which they said was set up like a solar system with a different orbits. And I found an article about Rutherford. One of Rutherford's favorite books was Tesla's Book of His Patents, which included that lecture. So I traced directly that Rutherford knew one of his heroes was Tesla, and that Tesla talked about the structure of atoms based on different orbits like solar systems. And sure enough, Rutherford and Bohr come along, and they get Nobel Prizes for that idea. And if you look at any book on the history of physics, you will never see Tesla's name in there. But when Tesla was in his 100th birthday, which was 1956, Niels Bohr spoke at Tesla's 100th birthday. So he's a very important link. Another thing that I discovered, Tesla said that a light could operate sometimes like a wave and sometimes like a particle. Albert Einstein got a Nobel Prize for saying that light worked like a particle, the photoelectric effect. They didn't give Einstein his Nobel Prize for the theory of relativity because they didn't believe him, but they gave it to him for the photoelectric effect. And you can trace the photoelectric effect right back to Tesla. And Einstein, of course, was interested in electrical engineering. I haven't found a direct link between the two of them early on. When Tesla turned 75 in 1931, Einstein wrote him a happy birthday card, but there's no real correspondence between them. But my point is that to answer this fellow, yes, the history of physics, if you study it carefully, you will see that the theory of how atoms were structured and how light had the dual property of particle and wave can be found in Tesla's lectures in the 1890s, published and presented to the London Academy of Science, to the Paris Academy of Science in person, and also at Columbia University, and also published in his books, which were in the 1890s.
So did Tesla experiment or do anything further or anything at all with parapsychology or anything in that field?
His one of his good friends was Sir William Crookes. When he spoke at the London Academy of Science, the Royal Society of London, in about 1891 or 1892, all of the great scientists of the day were there. And Crookes was one of the most important ones. Oliver Lodge was there. What's his name? Like Lord Kelvin was there. Lord Rayleigh. Rayleigh won a Nobel Prize. J.J. Thompson, who got the Nobel Prize for the structure of the electron, was there, was present at his lecture. So Tesla knew all these guys. And Crookes had invented the Crookes tube, which was the precursor to the fluorescent light. And he was one of Tesla's great friends. And if you look at the history of parapsychology, you'll see that Crookes had he was good friends with a psychic. His name was D.D. Holm. And D.D. Holm was able to levitate. Now, this is just unbelievable. I mean, I've studied parapsychology for a long time. I've never seen anybody levitate.
Yeah.
But you read Crookes, who's a very important scientist, says, I invited Holm to my house, and the chair he was sitting in levitated a foot off the ground. And Crookes also was one of the first people to do telepathy studies, where one person would be in one room and someone would try to transmit a message to him in another room. And Crookes talked about parapsychology to Tesla a lot. So when Tesla was lecturing in Paris, and he was on his way to Germany, he had a vision that his mother was calling him. And he rushed to to Croatia, where she was born, where he was born, which was near the Adriatic Sea, about 150 miles from Rome. If you go right across the Adriatic, a little bit into Yugoslavia, that's where Smiljan was. And she was dying. And for a while, he thought that he had a telepathic experience with his mother, that they picked up her vibes. But the rational side of him changed his opinion, and eventually he dismissed any belief in parapsychology. And I find it so unbelievable that the guy who invents wireless communication couldn't believe that one brain could pick up the thought of another brain. So he did for a little while, and then he later rejected it.
That's interesting. Here's another question from the chat room. Again, by Mike, he says, I've seen pictures of Einstein and Tesla with other scientists that were supposed to be at the docks of the Philadelphia experiment. Is this true?
No, that photo is a picture with Einstein and Steinmetz and a bunch of other scientists. And there's a guy standing in between Einstein and Steinmetz. He looks just like Tesla. I thought it was Tesla. And I'm going back like to the 1980s, about 1985, 86, and I spoke to Leland Anderson, who's an amazing Tesla expert. He who'd studied him since the 1950s. And we did research, and it's not Tesla. It's just a guy who looks like Tesla. The guy's name, just like Johnny Carson, his name is John Carson.
Hmm.
So he looks like Tesla. And what's interesting about Steinmetz, he's a dwarf. He worked for General Electric. Now, going back to our story of what happened, how Edison was cut out of General Electric, and that, so now there were just two big electrical companies, GE and Westinghouse. GE was stuck with the wrong patent, so they needed the Tesla AC patents. So Steinmetz was a patent pirate. He basically stole Tesla's idea, and they used it in General Electric, and there was hundreds and hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars of lawsuits between the two companies until they finally settled. It was basically during the Niagara Falls. And Steinmetz went ahead and wrote textbooks. When I first began my research, one of the very first books I got was a book written by Charles Steinmetz in 1897 on the AC polyphase system. Big, thick, major textbook, mathematics and everything. Tesla's name's not in the book. And Steinmetz kind of apologizes in the beginning, but it's kind of like writing a book on the theory of relativity and leaving Einstein's name out. And so the reason that he left Tesla's name out was because they were in a patent dispute, and he was working for GE. So what happened is, when you go to Steinmetz's website, there's this great picture of him standing right next to his best friend, you know, Albert Einstein. So it's Steinmetz and Einstein. But when you see the actual photo, they photoshopped out all the other people, including the guy who looks like Tesla, in between the two of them. So it's a fake photo.
Huh.
And it's a funny kind of a thing, but that it's not Tesla, it's John Carson.
That's interesting. is there something about Tesla receiving different radio waves from Mars or Venus?
Yes, that's another very interesting story. What Tesla was also, when he met Sir William Crookes in London, when he spoke at the Royal Society of London, he stayed with Sir William Preece, P-R-E-E-C-E. And Preece was very interested in, they had telegraph wires in those days,
mm-hmm.
Morse code. And what they found out was that sometimes if you sent a message along one telegraph wire, it would be picked up by another telegraph wire. It was a resonant frequency. And Preece realized that the ground played an important role. And Tesla's invention of the radio, wireless communication, has to have a ground connection. The ground is very important,
right,
to how a radio works. And he got a lot of these ideas from Preece. And he stayed at Preece's house, and they were good friends. When Marconi started to do his experiments, one of the guys he hired was Preece. You know, when I was at the Tesla Museum in Belgrade, I did some research and I looked up the Preece letters, and I found out that what Tesla said to Preece was, look, if Marconi wants my stuff, fine, I'll give it to him. And Preece went to Marconi and said, Tesla's willing to give you use of his equipment. And Marconi said, I don't need Tesla's equipment, I can do it on my own. In 1901, Marconi wrote a big, huge article. And the article said that it's very easy to do wireless communication. All it takes is a Tesla coil and on and on. And so he was using Tesla's equipment, but he wasn't crediting Tesla, even though he's saying he's using a Tesla coil. And so what was the initial question that you had asked me?
Receiving radio waves from Mars or Venus.
Oh, yeah. So Marconi is now racing Tesla. Who's going to send the first impulse across the Atlantic Ocean? But Marconi is using Tesla's apparatus. So Marconi started, he was on boats, and he was sending impulses 50 miles apart, you know, boat would be 50 miles apart, or maybe from the boat to the land or whatever, and Tesla was in Colorado Springs. Now, I calculated the very day that Tesla probably received pulse frequencies from outer space. He said, I received 3 pulses on my equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my belief, it was in July of 1899, that one good possibility is that he actually picked up Marconi signals in the Atlantic Ocean. It skipped along the ionosphere, mm-hmm. and he picked up .., which is what Marconi was using to test his equipment. So one possibility is that Tesla simply picked up Marconi signals. Another possibility, which the Quorum brothers believe, and that is that Tesla picked up, it's called the morning chorus, when Jupiter is, when we're at dawn, Jupiter is rising in a sense. There's a pulse frequency that comes from Jupiter. And I've heard, they've redone Tesla's experiments, and I've heard it, and it sure sounds like it's very possible that it is the morning chorus, that he actually picked up an impulse from Jupiter. But Tesla attributed it to either Venus or Mars, and then later just said it came from Mars. And, of course, the Martians were a million years older than us. They were wiser than us. they had, you know, irrigated the entire planet.
Right.
They were ready for the humans to catch up to them, and who else would they contact but the greatest inventor of all times? So Tesla started to promulgate the idea that he had received impulses from extraterrestrials from Mars, and he wrote an article called Talking of the Planets, and then Nathaniel Hawthorne's son, Julian Hawthorne, kept at that whole idea that the Martians had contacted Tesla. Then he had big, huge articles in Philadelphia newspapers and in Collier's magazine. And it was one of the reasons, I think, why Tesla's name disappeared, because once his wireless system was not instituted, the more flakier side of Tesla started to come out, and his name kind of disappeared from the history books, and then the myth came up that he was actually born from the planet Venus, and that he was raised by Earth parents. And so the whole extraterrestrial link stems right from that whole thing. And I like the poetry of the idea that maybe he picked up Marconi signals, and in the screenplay that I've written with my partner Tim Eaton, that's the idea that we promote in the screenplay.
So the question from the chat room is, wouldn't that be the first radio telescope?
I think so, yes. Yes, he was testing his equipment, and he was monitoring thunderstorms. I've been to Colorado Springs many times. Colorado Springs lies right at the edge of a plain, the Great Plain.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Rockies start right at Pikes Peak in Colorado Springs. And you can look right down the mountains. You know, you can see 100 miles down. And you can see a lightning storm way off in the distance. And he was tracking thunderstorms 500-600 miles away, and that's when he picked up this equipment.
Hmm.
I mean, these pulses.
Interesting. All right, let me just a reminder to our listeners, if you are looking for the chat room on Blog Talk Radio is down tonight. We're apparently having some issues with it, so if you'd like to join us in the Paranexus chat room, you're more than welcome. Just go to paranexus.org, log into your account, and right there on the main page, if you scroll down a little bit, there's a little link, a little button that says Nexus Chat Rooms. That's where we're at. If you don't have a Paranexus account, you can get one free. Just register, and I'm monitoring that, and we'll approve it right away. And then you can join us in the chat room. If you'd like to call in and ask Dr. Cipher questions about Tesla, then you can certainly do that. The number is there on your screen. 347-945-7799, or you can use your click-to-talk button that is on your screen. So just to clear this whole thing up, Dr. Cipher, who invented the radio? Was it Marconi or was it Tesla?
I wanted to find out. That was the whole point of my doctoral dissertation, and then I obviously put it in Wizard, and I wanted to find out who really invented the radio. And there was a guy before Tesla. His name is Loomis, L-O-O-M-I-S. And he had wireless communication. But it was so early in the game, actually in the early 1880s, that he was so far ahead of the curve that he didn't get any credit. I think Tesla used some of his stuff. But the real inventor of how the radio works is definitely Tesla. And Marconi stole his apparatus, but he didn't understand the apparatus. They were using different frequencies. Tesla was using continuous waves, whereas Marconi was using pulse frequencies. In other words, Marconi could only pick up Morse code. That's what he was able to send, and he had no idea how to change channels. He didn't. Even in Marconi's biographies on Marconi, written by his daughter, he had no idea what a different channel was. He could only transmit on one channel.
One frequency.
Tesla was using one frequency. Tesla was using many frequencies, many channels, and he was using continuous waves, the Tesla currents. So in order to send a photograph by means of wireless, and if you look at the history of television, the name Korn will show up, K-O-R-N. In about 1905, he was sending pictures by means of wireless. The basis of television goes back to Arthur Korn, and Arthur Korn attributes his invention, his ability to send pictures, to Tesla and to the Tesla system and to these continuous waves. So they always use, they talk about the Hertzian frequencies, but they're not really Hertzian frequencies. They're Tesla frequencies, and they are the ability to send impulses that are continuous, so you can send electrical power and also photographs and eventually pictures and obviously voice. So there was a tremendous difference between the two of them. And so what happened was Marconi got all the praise, and he really was the first person who was able to prove that he sent an impulse across the Atlantic Ocean in 1901. And he eventually gets the Nobel Prize in 1909, and Tesla was very angry at the Nobel Prize Committee because Marconi had used Tesla's apparatus. One of the amazing things I found using the Freedom of Information Act, I have a letter signed by Franklin Roosevelt. He was the Assistant Secretary of the Navy in 1915, and it's quoted in length, you know, in full in Wizard, in the book. Marconi was suing the U.S. government because the U.S. government, as World War I was beginning, was using wireless communication. And Marconi said, you have to pay me because you're using my apparatus to communicate between ships and ship to shore. And what Roosevelt did was he looked at the history of wireless and he found out that Tesla predated Marconi. And the letter is signed by Roosevelt right at the bottom. And it says, we realize that Tesla is the initial inventor of the wireless. Let's use that information in any patent dispute litigation with Marconi. And in fact, that's exactly what happened. And then in 1943, right after Tesla died, the Supreme Court overturned Marconi and said that Tesla really is the original inventor. So there's proof many, many different ways, but I actually follow it year by year, and I can show that Marconi was about 11 or 12 years old when Tesla was doing his wireless experiments at Columbia University, at the Royal Society in London, and at the Royal Society in Paris. So he was showing the top people in the world of his stuff, and he's definitely the inventor of the wireless ahead of Marconi.
Cool. So he died alone and penniless?
I don't think he was really penniless. It's a very interesting story, his finances. I found a letter at the museum in Belgrade. I think it was, wasn't John Jacob Astor written a letter? It was to John Jacob Astor. In any event, Tesla got $500,000 from Westinghouse for the wireless patents. He got it over time, and he owed about half of it to his backers in the 1890s. But still, $250,000,
yeah,
even today, is a lot of money.
Yeah.
So he was a multimillionaire equivalent throughout the 1890s, and he plowed it all into his equipment, and he had a fire. He lost about $500,000 worth of equipment, and Adams gave him money, $40,000, and then Astor gave him $100,000. So he was doing fine up until about 1904, 1905. So we're talking about a good 14 years where he lived like a millionaire. And then he ran out of money, and he kept trying to get more money from Morgan to complete Wardenclyffe. I can talk about that a little later, but I'll talk about his finances. And then after Morgan died, he got money from Morgan's son, about $20,000 around 1910, 1914, to build turbines, steam turbines. And when you track the monies that he got from Alice Chalmers or whatever, he was doing pretty well. He had secretaries, he had an office, he had a laboratory. But as he got older, so we're talking about when he was already in his late 60s, early 70s, he was then running out of money. And Hugo Gernsback had the sci-fi magazines, and he basically shamed the Westinghouse company into giving Tesla money. And so they provided money for his housing. So So when he lived at the Hotel New Yorker for the last 10 years of his life, he didn't pay a cent for his rent. It was paid by the Westinghouse Company, and also Yugoslavia had given him a pension. And he was making money on the side, too. So he never really was penniless. He really wasn't. But he certainly was a lot poorer in the last 10 or 15 years of his life as compared to the multimillionaire high lifestyle that he had when he was in his 40s and 50s.
Yeah, that's interesting. We'll talk about his fascination with the number three and so forth when we come back on the second half of the show here. We're coming up toward the top of the hour, and we appreciate those of you who have joined us in the chat room. Again, the Blog Talk Radio chat room is down tonight, so if you're looking for the chat, come on down to Paranexus.org. If you're a member, log in and join us in the chat room. If you're not a member, you can register for free and get access to the chat room. And just look on the main page for the chat room button, a little picture there that says Nexus Chat Rooms, and you can join us there. We're going to take a break in just a moment, and we're talking with Dr. Mark Cipher about Tesla, and we've got some other things to also discuss before the show is over. So if you'll hang in there with us, we'll be back in just a minute.
Professional Association of Paranormal Researchers, Paranexus.org. Where can you get research training, share data, and network with other researchers? Paranexus.org.
Where will you find a set of international standards for paranormal research groups?
Paranexus.org.
Paranexus is a global professional association of progressive paranormal investigators, parapsychologists, cryptozoologists, ufologists, and psychically gifted individuals focused on understanding the human condition through the scientific study of paranormal and psychical phenomena.
Paranexus.org.
A place to learn, a place to share, a place to network, a place to come together. Join us now at Paranexus.org.
And welcome back, everyone, to Paranexus Universe. This is Doug Kelly here with Grant Rubendunce. We're having a nice discussion with Dr. Cipher. Welcome back, Dr. Cipher.
Thank you.
And just as a reminder for anybody who's just joining us, the chat room on Blog Talk Radio is down, so join us in the Paranexus chat room. It's on paranexus.org. If you're a member, log in. Scroll down about halfway on the front page and look for the button that says Nexus Chat Rooms. That's where we're at. If you don't have an account, you can register for one for free, and we'll get you in there. If you want to call in, the number's on your screen, 347-945-7799, or you can click on the Click to Talk button if you have a headset on your computer, and we'd love to take your questions. And we're dealing with some questions in the chat room, too, and it's becoming a good discussion. So, anyway, love to keep your questions coming. And Dr. Cipher, I understand that Tesla was, well, he had a fascination with the number 3. In fact, his room at the hotel, what was it, like 3327 or room number, something like that, that was divisible by 3?
I don't know what the number, what his room number was. I've seen pictures of it, and I know a couple people have actually been in the room. He did have a fascination with the number 3. He circled the block 3 times. In the doctor dissertation level of it, you know, people would say, well, he's an obsessive compulsive. And so I did a lot of research on what it meant to be an obsessive compulsive. He certainly was a cleanliness nut. And one of the reasons he was people were dying when he was a kid of cholera. And different diseases like that, and cleanliness played a big role. He talked about it was very important to have pure water. And even today, I mean, in the news in these weeks, the last few weeks, they talk about how important it is to have clean water, and hygiene is so important. So you have to put it in within that context. The other thing which I discovered, though, which I thought was made some sense to me, and that is he was ritualistic. And he was a workaholic. I mean, he worked around the clock. He liked to work at night. So he probably dined with his friends till, you know, 7, 8, 9 at night. And then he would go to the lab, and he worked through the night.
Hmm.
But I think the idea of, the counting the 3 and circling the block 3 times and all of that, I think one of the things I came up with was that it was a ritual that put him in the mental state to get into this high-level form of thinking.
That's interesting.
So a lot of people, you know, are like that. I think Wade Boggs, you know, he'd be chicken before every game. So he was a bit compulsive, but he also has the highest batting average, I think, in the history of baseball.
Doctor, did Tesla leave a lot of written documentation about his work?
Yeah, that's a funny story. When O'Neill wrote his book, he said that Tesla envisioned everything. And this myth grew up that he just, you know, he just did everything in his mind. He didn't work anything out on paper. And Dr. Marincic, who is the head of the Tesla Museum, who a good friend of mine, I've known him since the 1980s, he discovered the Colorado Spring Notes. So when Tesla was in Colorado, he worked out everything on paper, all the mathematics. He was an A-plus student in physics and higher order math, and he did all these calculations. And when the Serbs, because all the stuff was sent back to Serbia, found out that he had these calculations and notebooks, they didn't want to publish them because they liked the myth that he did it all in his head. And Marincic, who's also a Serb, said, wouldn't it be greater to explain exactly who he is and exactly what he did? So he had to argue with the other people to show the Colorado Spring Notes, and then he's the guy who published them. So it's all there. All the math is there. Excuse me for a second.
So he did detail document what he was researching and his findings.
Yes, it's really important to realize that all the math is there. The Corum brothers, Ken Corum and his brother Jim Corum, C-O-R-U-M, they're physicists, and they have reproduced a lot of his stuff. And if he said something, they find mathematically that it's so. Now, this gets important when you start to talk about cosmic rays, because Tesla said that he discovered cosmic rays that could travel 50 times the speed of light. Now, that is very radical thinking. They have not yet been able to verify that, but this is a big question. If Tesla said he did something, odds are he probably did, but that's one of those great mysteries. You know, are there cosmic rays that actually travel faster than the speed of light? Did he actually measure these rays? That's one of these, you know, great mysteries about him.
Well, it almost sounds as if he was referring to tachyons, you know, and we know that, you know, the physicists have been able to verify their existence. I mean, for an individual with such an incredible vision of things to come, I had also heard, too, and maybe you can kind of verify this, Doctor, whether it's true or not, that I heard that Tesla made claims that he could, that he had a means of communicating with extraterrestrials, or a means of the equivalent of something like our SETI program.
Well, this is a part of the myth of his life, and there's a couple of people involved that promulgated the myth. One of them was Tesla himself. In 1899, he did indeed receive impulses on his equipment at Colorado Springs, which he thought came from Mars. The Corum brothers think that they came from Jupiter. I think they're probably right, but I like the idea that he picked up Marconi signals, and maybe that's what he picked up. But he certainly picked up some signals from someplace. Because he said that he had received impulses from outer space, the UFO group latched onto that. And there was a lady by the name of Margaret Storm, and she wrote a book called Return of the Dove, which is a mythological version of Tesla's life, which said that he was born on the planet Venus, and he landed on the Earth, and he was raised by Earth parents, kind of like the Superman story up in the mountain in Croatia. And this was in the 1950s. You know, the original, the day the Earth stood still. That film was made in the 50s. We were that kind of, you know, it was the McCarthy period, a lot of paranoia, and UFOs were seen at that time, the flying discs and all of that. And so what had happened was that Tesla's name literally disappeared from the history books. One of the reasons it disappeared, I told you in the first half, was what happened with Steinmetz. Here's a guy who's writing textbooks on the AC polyvase system, which are being used by college students for the next 30, 50 years. They're learning all about the AC polyphase system. They never heard of Tesla. They heard of Steinmetz. For all they knew, Steinmetz is the inventor of this. So there are a number of reasons why Tesla's name was disappeared, and it was kept alive in the UFO circles. I was teaching parapsychology in the 1970s. I was teaching, you know, out-of-body experiences, telepathy, and life after death, and all that kind of stuff. And one of my best friends, Howard Smuckler, was teaching UFOs. And he had gotten a magazine called Ancient Astronauts, and the premise of the magazine was that they were extraterrestrials that had helped build the pyramids and all that kind of stuff. And I was writing articles for him, and I went down to New York, and I was researching Lobsang Lhapa, who turned out to be a Caucasian guy who said that it was a Tibetan had taken over his body and was writing these books, The Third Eye. And they're great books. He's written about 14 books. And so I was writing a lead article on Lobsang Lhapa, and that's how I discovered Tesla. I discovered Tesla in a book written by Margaret Storm, where she lists all the great avatars. Lhapa was one, Jesus was one, and then there's this guy Tesla who invented all these inventions. I never heard of the guy, but I was in the New York Public Library, and I found that indeed he really lived. And I forget the company, but there was a UFO company. I used to get mailings from them, and Tesla's name was listed, and they actually had a list of his patents. And so I got a book of his patents. It's like a 700-page book. And so his name was kept alive in the UFO circles. And Practical Genius, the original Tesla biography written by O'Neill, was sold by the occult bookstores. You couldn't get them in the normal bookstores. So the UFO people are really the people that kept Tesla's name alive. It's an irony. And there was a lot less information on Tesla in the 1970s when I began my research than today, now with the Internet, et cetera. One of the things you would ask, you know, how come Tesla's still not well known? I think there's a bifurcation which has occurred. In other words, there's a group of people that know humans are telepathic. We know that we've been visited by some extraterrestrials, that they're out there, the crop circles and all that. And these kinds of people, they know about Tesla. And then there's another group that, you know, that are, in a sense, they live more closed lives, and you know, they go through life, they don't really question anything. And a lot of these people never heard of Tesla. So you've got these two different groups, the seekers, who are open-minded and looking enough for these possibilities, and then the other group, which is the masses who blindly follow, you know, Bush into Iraq and all of that kind of stuff. So you've got these two groups.
Well, preach, you know, it's really a shame though that a guy with genius of his magnitude has been relegated to, like, you know, to the fact that a lot of people really don't know about him or don't know what a great genius he was and the contribution he made. And that's kind of mind-boggling, and, you know, it makes me kind of wonder, and of course, if this is a myth, please put it to rest, Doctor, but I had read someplace, or I recall, that when Tesla died, supposedly the story is, the truth is, it could be myth, is that the FBI came in and confiscated all of his works. Is there any truth to that?
Yes, and I have a giant chapter in Wizard on the papers, the secret Tesla papers. I wrote to the Freedom of Information Act, and I got the FBI files, a big, giant, thick file. It took me 2 years to get it. So I had to wait 2 years. That's a long time. And I also wrote to the CIA and the Office of Alien Property and other places, and I got a lot of papers on his stuff. And I put everything I know is in Wizard. I didn't hold anything back. I'm not, like, holding secret stuff back. It's all in the book. And I track exactly what happened. One of the problems was Tesla had invented a particle beam weapon. And what Tesla realized is, let's say you shine a flashlight off into the distance, the light spreads apart. So if you have a death ray, if you want to send a death ray over a long period of time, it's going to spread apart. So he used his brain to figure out, how can I send a single stream? He had worked with laser beams, but he didn't totally realize what he had discovered. And I prove, I think, that he invented the laser beam, but he didn't really exploit it to the level that he should have. And the people who get credit for the laser beam deserve the credit that they got, because Tesla simply didn't exploit it. But he figured out that if I could send a single particle, the particle beam, it would never spread out. They were little tiny pellets. Now, Tesla, as a child, had worked with a pop gun. I don't know if you ever had a pop gun, but it has a cork at the end of it, and you press some air into it, all of a sudden the cork will explode out, and it's usually attached by a string.
Mm-hmm.
That's how the pop gun worked. So it uses a repelling force. The air repels this cork out. Now, what Tesla invented was the idea that if you created a belt of, say, negative ions going around and around and around in a circle, and you had a cannon with a hole in it, and you had ions of the same exact charge, when a negative charged pellet would interact with the negative belt of electrons, it would be repelled, and it would be shot out, the cannon. That's what the particle beam weapon was. And he was trying to sell it to the United States. He was trying to sell it to Russia, who were actually our allies during World War II. And he was trying to sell it to Churchill and to England. So, and the other problem was that Tesla was Yugoslavian by birth. So Yugoslavia was a communist country, but again, you have to put it in context. They were our allies during World War II. So he was negotiating with our allies. He was not negotiating with our enemies. Our enemy was Nazi Germany. And the Yugoslavs, Tesla is a huge hero. He's on the $1 bill in Yugoslavia. They thought Tesla, even this 80-something-year-old man, was going to come back to Yugoslavia and put up his particle beam weapons and Star Wars technology and shoot down incoming planes and protect them from the Nazis. So J. Edgar Hoover was following him around. His nephew, Sava Kasanovich, was the ambassador from this communist country called Yugoslavia. So when Tesla died, all of his papers were impounded, were collected, and he was also working with the War Department, and I have the letters on a lot of that research in Wizard, where you can, you know, see the letters back and forth. And he was showing them how the particle beam weapon worked. No one knew about this. O'Neill didn't know about this. Nobody knew about it. And it was hidden away in the archives. And after he died, the Office of Alien Property kept his papers for about 10 years. And the FBI and different people, a guy from MIT named Trump, went in and microfilmed and photographed all this stuff. And he didn't think much of it. He was arrogant. Trump was arrogant and didn't realize that Tesla invented a particle beam weapon. And I discovered, with the help of Tom Bearden, an article that was in Aviation Weekly, I think, and it was a drawing of a particle beam weapon that the Russians had. And when Andrea Puharich finally he got a hold of the papers, he presented them at the Colorado Springs in 1984, where I was speaking, and he showed the world Tesla's patent for the particle beam weapon, and lo and behold, it exactly matched the Russian design, which had been released about 10 years earlier in Aviation Weekly. So there was a lot of evidence that the particle beam weapon, we were stupid. We sent all of that stuff back to Yugoslavia, and they gave it to the Russians, and they've got a lot of the secret papers. One of the reasons I think Tesla is not well known is because he himself kept some of his stuff secret. Now, this he had to keep secret because it was a secret weapon. But he also had a secret theory on gravity. And it took me years to figure it out. I put a little bit in Wizard, but then in the new book I wrote, Transcending the Speed of Light, I really explained what his theory of gravity is. And it has military applications, but I'm more interested in cosmology and how it links to the structure of the universe. So what I wrote in Wizard was one little sentence. I've read everything ever been written about Tesla. He was interviewed by a very famous reporter, Alsop, A-L-S-O-P. They were brothers that wrote for the New York Times. And he told Alsop that the sun was absorbing more energy than it was radiating. Now, if you think about this, that is a bizarre thought. The sun is absorbing more energy than it's radiating. We all know what it's like to get a sunburn.
Yeah.
Okay. So I put that in there, but it took me a couple of years after I wrote the book to totally figure out what the heck he meant by that. And the more I thought about it, the more I realized he's got to be right. I mean, otherwise this thing would be would disappear. It would just burn up. I mean, it would use up all of its energy. But if it's absorbing energy, then it could keep going. And that is linked to his theory of gravity and his theory of the ether, which was opposed by Albert Einstein. So in my next book, Transcending the Speed of Light, I discuss Einstein's theory of relativity and what's wrong with the theory. You were just mentioning tachyons. Einstein said nothing could travel faster than the speed of light. We know our mind is not bound by the speed of light. You know, time slows down as you approach the speed of light. We all know what it's like to... I teach college. Part of me is still a college kid. I mean, I just turned 60, and I'm still a college kid in my head. I mean, I remember the friends I had, the things we did. Time doesn't matter at all to the mind. Am I right?
Right.
So we're transcending time all the time.
The mind is non-local.
Exactly. And so clearly our mind is not in a physical dimension, but it is in a let's say it's in a hyperphysical dimension. It's part of the universe or the
must be.
The physical universe, but it's in another dimension. And what Einstein did was he said nothing could travel faster than the speed of light, but he also said that he didn't ultimately say that the ether didn't exist, but he said you didn't need the ether. So in order for light to get from the sun to the earth, it could travel like a particle, and it could travel like a bullet. And so he did away with the necessity of the ether. And Tesla took him on. He said, you know, because Einstein said that space was curved around stars.
Mm-hmm.
And Tesla said, how could nothing be curved? How could space be curved? The reason why light bends around stars is it's being attracted by a force field. That made a lot more sense to me. And I was working with a physicist who was a student of Werner Heisenberg's, Edwin Gorer, who's in the Transcending the Speed of Light book. And he said they might be talking about the same thing, but just looking at it differently. But here's what happened in Einstein's case. As I'm writing the new book, I'm reading and also listening to on tape the book, the new Einstein biography by Walter Isaacson. An excellent book. And he follows Einstein's life through his letters, and it's a really good book. There's some things that are missing from Isaacson's book, like Minkowski barely makes a dent in the book. But Isaacson is, like everybody else who writes about Einstein, they bow down to the great thinker. They're unable to criticize this guy. But what happened with Einstein was Einstein had set up a universe with empty space, with particles traveling like bullets. Meanwhile, de Broglie came along about 1917 or thereabouts with wave mechanics. Now, he knew that they all know the particles can act like waves and they can act like particles. What de Broglie did was he emphasized the wave-like aspect of the particle. So the whole idea of wave mechanics started to become more fashionable way after Einstein's 1905 discussion of the theory of relativity. So Einstein started to rethink his structure of the universe, and he started to get back to the ether was important. And in 1920, he went to Leiden University, where Max Planck was teaching, and Lorentz was teaching, and he talked about the ether, and that the ether really existed. But it was too late. They had 15 years of his theory of relativity. The ether didn't exist. Tesla insisted that the ether existed. He also insisted that the sun was absorbing more energy than was radiating. So I put those two facts together, and I also did a lot of research on the ether on the internet, and I pieced together what I think is essentially what became Einstein's grand unification theory. There are four forces to the universe. There is electromagnetism, gravity, the strong nuclear force, and the weak nuclear force. According to physicists, that's it. Those four forces explain everything. Gravity holds planets together. Electromagnetism holds molecules together. The strong force holds the nucleus inside the atom together. And the weak force holds the neutron together, an electron and a proton inside the nucleus. That's it. I argue in Transcending the Speed of Light, we need a fifth force, which is consciousness.
Right.
So there's got to be at least five. But what I also, what happened with Einstein was he tried for the last 40 years of his life to combine gravity with electromagnetism. He couldn't do it. The reason he couldn't do it was because he did away with the ether. And here's what I think the new paradigm should be. When Tesla said that the sun is absorbing energy, he's talking about what gravity is. So if you're on the Earth and you jump up, the reason you fall back down to the ground is not because of some mystical attraction between the planets. The planet itself and all of matter is absorbing energy all of the time. It's absorbing ether. Ether is from a hyperphysical realm. It's a realm that travels faster than the speed of light, a tachyonic realm. And that realm is stepped down through the elementary particles, through the electrons and protons, and that's what keeps them spinning. So if you look at the structure of an atom, you have a nucleus in the center, and then you have, say, an electron traveling around the atom. That electron is spinning on the top. It's spinning on its own axis as it's going around the atom. What is keeping that electron spinning? That's what the question I asked myself, and I got the answer. It's absorbing ether. It's absorbing energy all of the time, and it's converting that energy into electromagnetic forces. So here, that is Einstein's dream of grand unification. You have to go back and study Tesla's theories to realize that Tesla was right, that the ether is what ether is. It's being absorbed by matter all the time, and what we call gravity is really the absorption of ether by the matter on the Earth. We're like in the way. One of the on the internet, I read this one article which I thought was neat. Let's say I have a big giant fan blowing into a room, and a fly is on a screen, and the fly can't get off the screen because every time it flies away, the fan blows it back onto the screen. That's what we are. We're like the fly on the screen. So we can't escape the Earth because the Earth is absorbing energy all of the time. That's what gravity is. Now, here's where I took a real quantum leap in my thinking. A good friend of mine is Uri Geller, who is a psychic, and he bends objects, and a lot of people don't believe him. But I suggest anybody who doesn't believe Uri Geller, get the book, The Geller Papers. These are 17 scientists all around the world that studied him, think tanks, including Stanford Research Institute, in the 1970s, and he passed every test you can possibly imagine. I've seen him bend a few things, and Senator Pell just passed away, saw him bend objects. And Pell mentioned, and I've seen when Geller bends something, it bends against gravity. So I saw him took a giant spoon, and he rubbed the top of the spoon, and the spoon bent upwards. Now, what I'm thinking is that if he's able to block the in stream of ether, in other words, the spoon, as every physical object, needs to absorb energy all the time. If you could interfere with the influx of energy, the spoon would start to disintegrate. In other words, it would start to bend. And it would bend against gravity because it's not really gravity we're talking about. It's this in-stream that it's interfering with. So I think that there are a number of fascinating possibilities of new theories that could come out of rethinking, looking at Einstein's theory and seeing that Einstein's theory of relativity is flawed. There are things that travel faster than the speed of light. Space is not curved. There's no such thing as curved space. It's the ether. And that what we call gravity is really the absorption of ether. I think we're going to get into whole new realms. I also think our mind...
It certainly makes one ponder what you're talking about, Doctor, with... What about dark matter? Is the relationship, is dark matter really ether?
For dark energy.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I think dark matter is.
Counterbalance, and maybe that's the wellspring from where our energy comes to fuel our sun. It seems like in nature and even with human physiology, we always try to keep this state of homeostasis, and maybe the universe is always in a state of homeostasis because, what you said about the sun is absolutely fascinating. It just makes you think of what's the infinite source of energy?
I think, you're onto something. I look at it a little bit differently, but I love the idea that you're saying, this idea of counterbalance. In ninth grade, when I was a kid, I read George Gamow's books, G-A-M-O-W. He is one of the quantum physicists who grew up with his friends, Einstein and Bohr and Heisenberg and all these people, and he grew up with these people. And in one of his books called 30 Years That Shook Physics, he says that when they first discovered the structure of the atom, they found out that the electron was spinning at 1.37 times the speed of light. It was spinning faster than the speed of light. Uhlenbeck and Goudsmit made the measurements. Dirac came along, and he said, because that was violating relativity, and what Gamow says very clearly in his book, he says, it did not violate anything in quantum physics. What it violated was Einstein's theory of relativity. And I'm saying, you see what I mean?
Yeah, that's funny.
So Einstein's theory is wrong. And so what they did was, Paul Dirac came along, and he said, let's call, instead of it 1.37 times the speed of light, let's call it the square root of negative 1. Let's call it an imaginary number. And they said, that's great. We'll give you a Nobel Prize. You've now combined theory of relativity with quantum physics. And try to find the 1.37 times the speed of light on the Internet. I can't find it, but it's right in one of the most important books ever written on the history of physics. It's in Gamow's book. So I think that electrons interface different dimensions. And so you mentioned the dark matter.
Yeah.
I think that it's this etheric energy that's in the hyperphysical realm. It's in the tachyonic realm, and our minds are isosynchronous to that realm. Our minds operate with electromagnetic energy, and in transcending the speed of light, I talk about that. You know, just to think, we create a brainwave. So we know our brain is an electromagnetic energy. So even if we just accept Einstein's theory, our brain is at least operating at the speed of light, which therefore means that it's transcending time, because nothing physical can travel faster than the speed of light, but our mind is already operating at least the speed of light.
Well, that would seem to explain psychic ability now, wouldn't it?
Yes, and I think the whole non-locality idea and hyperdimension.
Precognition.
Precognition is I have a whole chapter on precognition in there.
And which book now? Which book are we talking about here?
This is Transcending the Speed of Light.
And, you know, we haven't mentioned your website. Would you mention your website and the two book titles we're talking about tonight?
Yeah, it's just my name. It's markseifer.com, markseifer.com. So it's just a very easy...
And it's on the paranexus.org, too, so you can hyperlink there. And your books are available on your website as well?
Yes, I got to get to the web people because I don't have Transcending yet on there, but it's certainly on Amazon. It's doing very well on Amazon. And the Tesla book continues to sell extremely well. I think what's happened, Marvels or whatever, one of the cable shows keeps showing a Tesla thing, and I think more and more people are becoming aware of Tesla. You know, he's just so important. You feel like he has to just burst onto the scene, don't you? I mean, it's you're on the edge.
Well, he most certainly was a man way ahead of his time, and his knowledge of electromagnetism is just mind-boggling, and it makes you wonder what was Tesla thinking? What did he do in his free time? You know, what were some of the things he didn't write down? Because the guy was just such an incredibly intelligent and perceptive and innovative thinker that it just boggles the mind to think what he might have been pondering in his spare time.
That's a great thought. You know, he did not invent the Internet. I'm not going to in any way, shape, or form claim that he did.
We're not going to give him credit for that tonight, not on our show.
No, but what's very interesting is that he foresaw the concept of what the Internet would become. In 1904, he wrote an article, and he was trying to talk Morgan into giving him money to complete Wardenclyffe. And in this article, he said, my wireless system will unify the whole earth. And just as you and I are talking, we're talking right now on the phone, we could be in the room together. He said, a person could be in Australia, another person could be in the United States, would be like talking across the table to each other. And then he says something, and you see his incredible genius. He said, through my mass communication system, thus the whole earth will be converted into a brain, as it were, able to feel in all its parts.
Wow.
Now that is conceptually what the Internet really is, isn't it?
Yeah.
The whole idea that we're all interlinked in this electromagnetic web. So he understood conceptually of what that was, and he's talking about that in 1904, even before, you know, we had the wireless phones.
must have been difficult for him, you know. It must have been very difficult to be, you know, kind of like a Michelangelo or a Da Vinci, you know, to be that far ahead of your time and to have to, I mean, to deal with folks around you who just couldn't even begin to fathom what you're talking about.
He had a very dark period. I'm also a handwriting expert, and I was looking at all the letters that he wrote, and in 1906, his handwriting falls apart, and he has a very beautiful signature. And in 1906, it's completely illegible, and in 1907, it's very brittle. It is very, very dramatic. You see, I just wrote a graphology book. I have the handwriting in there, too. It's called The Definitive Book of Handwriting Analysis. And you see that Tesla's handwriting falls apart in 1906, and that is the year that Morgan totally pulls the plug out of Wardenclyffe. Any of your viewers or listeners who...
Tell us about it.
Well, what happened was when Tesla returned to New York City from Colorado Springs, he moved back into the Waldorf Astoria, and he formed a partnership with J.P. Morgan, J.P. Clinton Morgan. Morgan was the most powerful man on the planet. I've got a political cartoon of Morgan where he's a giant king, and he has his minions, three little guys. One of them is the King of England, one is the Kaiser of Germany, and the other is McKinley, the President of the United States. So you have these three little dwarfs around this giant king. That's Morgan. That's the guy he goes to. Now, why does he go to Morgan? He's the greatest inventor in the world. He's a bit of a megalomaniac, and he goes to the richest man in the world. And he has the greatest architect in the world, Stanford White, design his tower. So he tells Morgan, I want to build a tower to send impulses to England. And Morgan leaves for England in 1901, and they sign the deal, and Morgan gives him $150,000. Meanwhile, Marconi sends an impulse from England to Canada and electrifies the world because he really sends the first wireless impulse. And Marconi writes an article, and he says, oh, it's easy to do. You just use a Tesla coil. Tesla freaks out because Marconi has stolen his patents, and he's admitting it, and he's getting all the accolades. So Tesla decides to double the size of the tower. So instead of building a 90-foot tower, which is what they contracted, he builds an 180-foot tower because he calculates if I do it at 180 feet, plus it goes into the earth 120 feet, it's really a 300-foot-long tower, essentially. Mm-hmm. I can then send impulses not only to England, but around the entire world.
Such as Tunguska?
Excuse me?
Such as Tunguska?
Yes. It will go all around the world, including there. That's another aspect of this story. So he says to Morgan, not only would it'll cost twice as much to build, but the revenues will be infinite because you won't just cover England, you'll cover South America, Australia, Asia. And so the revenues, just by doubling the amount of money, you will increase your revenue stream by many, many fold. And what Morgan can see is he breached the contract. I gave you $150,000 to build a 90-foot tower, and you're building a 180-foot tower. And Tesla said, well, Marconi did this then. So they got into a huge argument. And Tesla was pleading with Morgan, and there's 60 letters between them. And it took me literally 2 years, because you can hardly read these things, to map them out, put them in order, figure them out, and figure out exactly what was happening in history during all these times. McKinley gets assassinated during this time. There's a stock market crash, which Morgan is responsible for. And Tesla's pleading with him, I need $75,000 more. I will advance the world a century. He's talking about cell phone technology, wireless phones. He's talking about sending pictures, text. He also knows that motion pictures, it's possible to send that, but that's a little beyond what he's really thinking about. But he wants to send electrical power as well, and Morgan will not give him the money. So I logged different people that Tesla meets with, and they're all multimillionaires. One of them was Frick. Morgan had given Frick $60 million when U.S. Steel was created. Tesla, he lives in the Waldorf Astoria with Tesla. Frick's willing to give him the money. So he sets up a meeting with Frick and Thomas Fortune Ryan and Morgan, Jacob Schiff, and these are all gazillionaires. And in 1906, Tesla pleads with him and says, this is my last chance. I've got a meeting with these guys. Meet with them, and let's do the deal. And they all meet behind closed doors without Tesla there, and they'll come out and they just screw them. They not do it. And the reason they don't do it is that Morgan's afraid that Tesla's right. He doesn't know how you can make money with a wireless phone. How do you bill? They didn't have computers in those days. How do you know if someone's using the equipment? And Tesla's saying the revenue stream will come in a different way. We'll make it in selling the equipment. We all remember when we didn't have to pay for television, you know, ABC, NBC, and CBS were mega corporations that they handed it all out for free, and they made tons and tons of money. So he was looking at it from an entirely different way. So unfortunately, Wardenclyffe was never built, and the final straw happens in 1906, and his handwriting falls apart, and I discover a nervous breakdown that he has. Now, you talked about, you know, how hard it is to live with all of that. In the end of Wizard, I talk about Edwin Armstrong. Edwin Armstrong's hero was Tesla. Edwin Armstrong is the inventor of AM and FM radio. They're now switching to digital, but up until February 17th or whatever the date they're going to switch over, how many of you, do you know that you can pick up, I can pick up one television station on my radio. I pick up ABC. It's the same frequency, but it's off the dial. It's at the very edge of the dial. Sarnoff, who started NBC, stole the use of the FM frequencies to create the television frequencies, and he said, "It's my idea, not yours, Mr. Armstrong." And Armstrong, who was a millionaire, got into a legal battle with him, and he committed suicide. He jumped out of a building in the 1930s.
Armstrong did?
Armstrong did. And Sarnoff's responsible for Armstrong's suicide. And so the question is, why didn't Tesla commit suicide? I mean, Tesla had this great plan. In 1906, he's ready to advance the world a century. He's invested about $300,000. He borrowed money from his family. He borrowed money from the Johnsons. He's in debt greatly, and he's trying to build this whole thing, and he owes the world of Astoria money. And it's 1906. He lives through the 1940s. He lives another almost 40 more years. So I think he had tremendous fortitude, a transcendent view of the world, and he was able to go through a very dark period and come out. So I think he's to be looked up to in that sense, that he had the strength not to crumble, even in the face of all that tremendous adversity.
Did he keep up his research in his later years, Doctor? I mean, did he quietly keep his research? I mean, it would seem like a guy like Tesla wouldn't have, even though he may have faded from the public view, I would think he would have too many things going on to just up and put himself out to pasture.
I just saw last night a tribute to George Carlin, the comedian. He got the Mark Twain Award. He just died. He was 70 years old. And they showed, I remember him as a kid in the 1950s. Early
Me
50s.
Too.
He was creative his whole life. His last few stand-up routines were amazing. He never stopped creating. And I think Carlin is a genius in comedy. Tesla was like that. He never stopped creating. And the ultimate thing that you're talking about in question, I think I figured out a lot of his theory of gravity and ether, which I explained, which took me like 20 years or so of my own thinking to figure out what the heck he was talking about. But I haven't yet figured out his cosmic ray stuff. I mean, he said cosmic rays could travel 50 times the speed of light. He said that we could tap maybe this, what's called the zero-point energy.
Zero-point energy?
And do all that. There's this hidden stuff of Tesla's that is still yet to be mapped out, and he purposely kept it hidden. You mentioned Tunguska.
Mm-hmm.
It's very possible that he was responsible for Tunguska. If he was, in a way, I don't want to know, because it's a pretty powerful weapon possibility. So he was dealing in some very heavy stuff, but he obviously was a very positive guy. And we're in an energy crisis right now. It bugs me no end that we are giving all our money to people that are trying to destroy us, Bin Laden. Yeah. Those kinds of people are funded by our oil money. So if we can get off oil and convert to this idea of energy.
Free energy. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, the real sad thing about it, fellas, is the fact that, you know, if anything, history unfortunately seems to repeat itself, because if some of the folks that you alluded to, Doctor, were the aristocratic faction of the American society at the time. And we still have that mentality. Tesla faced it. I mean, you know, they didn't want to implement a lot of the things he did because, number one, like you alluded to, Doctor, there's going to be no profit margin for them or an immediate profit margin. And I think, you know, the same runs true now. You know, there's no doubt about it. And so creative, because there's a part of me that says somewhere off in the wilderness of America, there's somebody who has a very power efficient or fuel efficient form of some type of energy, and they're never going to get it patented because it's the day of fossil fuels. And until the fossil fuel giants run out, those sort of technologies aren't going to even be in place or allowed to be put in place.
I saw on YouTube, there's a guy in the Philippines who's been running cars on water for the last 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you Google YouTube Philippines car on water, you'll probably come up with this. And he takes a regular car, I'll pick a Ford or whatever. And we all know, I mean, we did this in ninth grade. We split up water into hydrogen and oxygen. So you have highly combustible gases. So cars could run on water. It's not a... really not a far-out thought at all.
And he died suspiciously, too.
Did he, this Philippine guy?
Oh, not the Philippine guy. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of an American. Different guy. Similar concept.
Yeah, I think you're right about the elitists. I mean, it bugs me no end that the American car companies continue to make gas guzzlers. I mean, we knew when Carter was president that you gotta have a car that got 35, 40 miles to the gallon. And they were still making cars that made, you know, 60.
Well, if only we'd have enacted some of the policies. I'm going to climb up on my soapbox here, political soapbox, and then jump right back down. If we'd only initiated some of the things that President Carter wanted us to do, because I'm one of your contemporaries, Doctor. Back in the 70s, we were talking about cutting back, and had we done so, we would have probably been in a lot better shape now.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
But we never did, you know, and it's really unfortunate, but... It seems to be a sad fact that when you have people that have that kind of genius or that kind of ability to foresee things and are not interested in the profit, but they're more interested in the betterment of humanity or to make humanity's life better, it's really sad that we have to butt heads with the materialistic side of it, that we can't find a compromise there.
One good guy, of course, is Al Gore, but when he was vice president, he didn't have the power to institute a lot of what he wanted. But he made this movie, An Inconvenient Truth.
Mm-hmm.
I was interviewed on the internet, and this guy came up with a great title. It's called An Inconvenient Genius. And I think if you Google that, this interesting interview with me comes up. But I think it's a neat way to promote Tesla. He is an inconvenient genius. Because he does interfere with the powers that be,
and
but he uplifts us. You know, he's just tremendously uplifting. And I've written a screenplay with my partner Tim Eaton. Tim Eaton is a special effects, visual effects editor. He's worked for Lucasfilms and Sony Imageworks, and he's out in California right now, Image Moving Digital Company. He's working on the new Jim Carrey movie. He worked on Titanic and Back to the Future, Galaxy Quest, and all these great films. And we've been trying to get a Tesla film made for the longest period. But I think it's coming. I'm hoping it'll be us that'll make it. But I think that all it takes is a movie, I think, to really raise the consciousness of the people to move us in that direction.
I just had a real quick question, Doctor, in regards to, did Tesla ever, do you think he ever faced any discrimination here in this country because he was a Serb? Do you think that might have fit into the equation somehow?
I think it was. I think, you know, Edison was seen as the all-American guy, and Edison, one way or another, was clever enough to keep his name attached to, like, the phonograph. And so he was the inventor of the light bulb, and they kept him as an American icon. And Tesla disappeared, I think, partly because he was from a foreign country, and in particular Serbia. Serbia was not a good country to come from, since the Serb, in a sense, one way or another, was responsible for World War One.
World War One, yeah.
And the Serbs have, been that way. The Serbs are a beautiful people. I've lectured in a number of Serbian communities. My book was translated into Croatian and into Serbian. I just came back from a book tour about a year and a half ago in Croatia and Serbia, and I spent a lot of time with that community. So they're really a beautiful people, but they have been downtrodden. Hitler tried to wipe them out. He killed about 90,000 Serbs during World War II. So there's, I agree with you. There's that certainly played a role. Tesla's not an all-American type person. He was an elitist. But I think, you know, you have to blame Tesla to some extent, too. He did double the size of the tower with Morgan. And I felt he should have dropped back and punted, and he refused. He didn't do little things. He could have set up wireless phone system in New York City on a very small scale. He had a deal with the Navy, which I talk about at length in the book, which he gave up. He could have put in his wireless system in Navy contracts. They didn't want to pay him enough, but he was he wanted to do the big giant thing or do nothing. He's uncompromising in that regard. So I think, you know, you can't just totally blame society. I think Tesla himself, I think back to there was a guy who could do a quad in ice skating when no one could do a quad. And I remember, you know, this guy kept trying to do the quad, and when he hit it, you know, you would feel amazed. But he would try it all the time, and he would not succeed. And I don't even know his name. He just disappeared, you know. He was trying to do too much. I think Tesla, in a way, was trying to do too much at once. I think if he had started a little bit slower, a little bit more piecemeal, Marconi got great leverage out of just sending dot, dot, dot across, you know, the ocean. Tesla could have done that with one hand tied behind his back, but he wanted to send voice, pictures, and power, and he also wanted to light up the shipping lanes. He wanted to electrify the atmosphere so that ocean liners wouldn't have to travel in the dark. I mean, he had huge ideas.
Well, here's a question from the chat room in connection with your work on consciousness. Do you have any thoughts on 2012, the end of the Mayan calendar?
Well, I remember, you know, the Y2K scare. I had a guy who, you know, insisted I buy, you know, 50 pounds of rice and race to the end of the world. I think we live in cycles. I think we've just seen, you know, the end of a major cycle with the crash of the stock market. I think there's a lot to the Mayan calendar, but I'm an optimist. I mean, I have great hope and belief in that things will work out. I know we'll go through good periods and bad periods, but I think we're on the upswing. I think that we're going to go, I think we'll continue to go down for a little while because we're in a down spiral for a while. But I think Obama is a very positive force. I think we've got a whole good group of guys in there. And so I'm very hopeful. I'm not worried about 2012.
Is anybody doing following up on any of Tesla's research now, Doctor? That we know about anyway?
Well, I think Jim and Ken Corum are, Corum. These guys are brilliant, wonderful, wonderful people. They've written tons and tons of stuff on Tesla. But they're older, you know, they're in the 60s. Nobody young that I know of, and I would like to make an appeal to people like MIT. I think they could start with my biography, Wizard, and the new book, Transcending the Speed of Light, and start to read it. There are important thoughts that Tesla has which have applications in science. This is not mystical mumbo jumbo. This is real stuff, and the proof is that he really is the inventor of all these great inventions. He's not just some great guy says, well, he's got great thoughts, there's nothing behind it all. He can prove it. He really is the guy whose name's on the patent plaque at Niagara Falls.
Did Tesla ever do any experimentation or have anything to say about invisibility?
The whole Philadelphia experiment, I think, was an experiment on cloaking, like the stealth bomber. I do not believe a ship disappeared and reappeared or dematerialized. Yeah, it disappeared off a radar screen. That's what happened, and then the wackos got a hold of it and said that it dematerialized. Tesla was involved in radar and in encryption. He is the inventor of cell phone technology in the sense that he's the guy who came up with the idea of how to create an unlimited number of wireless channels, and that's directly linked to radio guidance systems and encryption devices and stealth technology. So there's a direct link to all of that, to his research.
Well, great. I wanted to, we're getting up to the top of the hour now and going to have to start wrapping it up here shortly. Let's mention your website again and the names of your books and how people can get those.
Okay, again, my website is markseifer.com, MarkSeifer.com. And the two books we've been talking about today are Wizard, The Life and Times of Nikola Tesla. It's in its 10th printing. There's over 40,000 copies in print. It's been translated into Russian, Croatian, Czech, Serbian. And the other book is my new book called Transcending the Speed of Light, Consciousness, Quantum Physics, and the Fifth Dimension. I think if you just Google my name or go to Amazon, you'll see those books come up.
Yeah.
And
so, and there's also a link on paranexus.org. If you click on the radio program tonight, you'll get Dr. Seifer's website. Here's one last question from the chat room. How did Tesla keep from being overexposed when he was working on X-rays?
That's a good question. Elihu Thompson got burnt playing with the X-rays, and he blamed Tesla because he was using Tesla's equipment. He hated Tesla. And said, I even got burnt with the X-rays. And I think he risked his health then. They all did in the 1890s. I think he got lucky that he didn't have any residual effects.
Yeah.
So it's a great question. And he was a good friend with Roentgen. Roentgen was the first guy to get a Nobel Prize, and there's letters back and forth between them. But Tesla may have invented the X-ray before Roentgen, but he didn't exploit it at all. And Roentgen certainly deserves all the accolades that he got. So that's a great question. I think he was lucky.
Well, we appreciate the time you've given us tonight. Very interesting discussion. Obviously, you know your stuff in a variety of areas. Am I correct in understanding that you've done some work in ufology, or at least conceptually, in addition to parapsychology?
Yes, I had a journal called Metascience, and we had articles on UFOs going back to the late 1970s, the early 80s. And I've done a lot of research on telepathy and in that area, and I make a big plea in Transcending book. I think university students today should be studying telepathy. It's really absurd that we are not studying higher conscious abilities that we have. I've done a lot of research in all those fields, and that book is 30 years of my research in parapsychology and also advanced Tesla theories and an Einstein series.
Well, we'd love to have you back and maybe discuss some of those things and more on your book on transcending consciousness. Is it the speed of light?
Transcending the speed of light.
Yeah. And so, excellent information. We appreciate everybody's time that they've given us tonight. Glad you could join us. And Dr. Seifer, thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thank you, Doug, and thank you, Grant. This is a great pleasure, and I appreciate very much you having me on your show.
Yeah,
it was lovely to have you, Doctor, and we'll have you again if your schedule permits, because it's been very educational, not only for myself, but I'm sure for the audience, and we really do appreciate it.
Okay, thanks again.
Yeah, and have a good night, Dr. Seifer. Thanks again so much. We thank our listeners for your time again. Appreciate you switching over to the Paranexus chat room. As you may have heard, the Blog Talk Radio chat rooms are down tonight. Hopefully we'll be back online shortly. Now next week we have Bob Otis going to be with us. At least that's the plan right now. We're going to be talking about time travel. Sounds like an interesting topic, something that we can get into then. If you have not visited paranexus.org lately, come and join us. Take a look at the site. We're adding new things. For members, I just added some video tutorials. We've got more coming, and I've also just added the audios and videos from our recent conference back in October. And if you're a member, then you have access to that. So that's something that we're trying to do to give our members more benefits. So anyway, we appreciate everybody's time and attention. And Grant, it's been a great show, huh?
Absolutely. It's been fascinating.
Everybody, have a great night and a great week. Talk to you later. Good night.
Bye.
In the night, in the shadows, in the sky, it's Paranexus Universe.